Good morning, everybody. Welcome to Robots at Red Tape. As always, I am your host, Nick Schutt. Happy to have Dr. Barry LaFue join me today. Barry, thank you so much for coming on the podcast, man. I really appreciate you.
Yeah, sure thing, Nick. It's a pleasure. And I want to say thanks to you for putting together such an innovative and thought-leading podcast, right, about how AI can impact government and improve government services. So kudos to you.
Thank you, sir. Thank you. And I again appreciate you being willing to hop on and chat. If you don't mind, Barry, for everybody that's listening, you just give everybody a little bit about yourself, your background, and how you got here.
Yeah, sure thing, Nick. So what I'm doing today is I'm the vice president at InQtel, and InQtel is a strategic investor where we invest in innovative technologies and companies to help bring innovation into the government, into the intelligence community, the Department of Defense, and other parts of government. And what I do is I work with our portfolio firms to help them craft and help them understand how to best support and do business in the government sector. Right. Prior to InQtel, right, I started my career quite a long time ago, where I started working as a software developer, working for a government contractor, building software for the government. And from there, I shifted. I went to work at Oracle, where I spent 10 years in a very high, fast growth company, and again, kind of focused on helping the government bring technology, improve their capabilities in a wide variety of areas. After Oracle, I spent 5 years working at Next Software, which was Steve Jobs' startup. It's a fascinating experience. And again, I led our government strategy and business. I've done a variety of things over the years, including I spent 14 years at Adobe, where I led their public sector business in the US and Canada, and really helped them grow and build the business. I've also worked 5 years at SAP. I've run my own consulting business. And then, Nick, what I did in during COVID, right? I think we all went through this whole thing of, hey, what are we going to do? And I wanted to do something a little different, so I decided to start a working on a doctorate where I went to Drexel University and I studied really this emerging area of AI and how AI might be utilized to improve expert services and the delivery of services to citizens and to people around the country.
That's amazing, man. This is amazing. My COVID project was not a well, educational in a different way. And that's fantastic, man. Why did you choose to get a PhD in AI as opposed to, something a little bit, let's just say more traditional?
Yeah, so I was very interested in how AI could potentially, transform and really accelerate delivering services. And what was the motivation, Nick, between the topic that I selected was back in 2021, people's perception of government service reached an all-time low, right? And during that time, now 9 out of 10 calls to the IRS went unanswered. And there was a real outcry in terms of, this is unacceptable in terms of the services that our government provides to our citizens. And so I kind of looked at that problem set. And what occurred then was President Biden issued an executive order to improve online services, but in additionally to look at hiring an additional 84,000 people to help answer these phone calls. And what struck me was, wow, what a perfect place to use technology as opposed to hiring 84,000 people to answer phones. Why not leverage AI to help answer the and provide services to citizens? And so my study then became, basically looking at how would people react to using AI for expert tax services as compared to a human CPA. And that was basically my study, kind of evaluating people's attitudes and their reactions, to that scenario.
And Barry, what were some of the biggest surprises about, speaking specifically as trust of individuals that would be end users of this service in either, in an AI system versus a human CPA?
Right. So, Nick, trust is just such a fundamental, predictor of whether or not people would be willing to use AI for tax advice, right? And people, I think, still prefer that human interaction. But what was surprising is the more they trusted AI, the more they were willing to utilize AI for tax advice, right? And what drove trust in my study were several things, right? Obviously, people had to feel that the AI was useful and provided value. But another very interesting and surprising thing was that people's perception of how human-like or anthropomorphism that the AI was, the more that they trusted it, right? So this whole perception around AI, one of the key takeaways was the more people perceived the AI to be human-like and to resonate with them in terms of, providing empathy and being interactive, the more that that drove trust. And those factors, usefulness, trust, and anthropomorphism, really impacted people's willingness to actually hire or utilize AI for tax advice.
And now, was there a difference in so and or did you look at was it were you exclusively looking at 100% human preparation versus 100% AI-based preparation, or were you or did you also look at somebody like that say a human CPA used a AI tool to prepare the taxes and then just reviewed them? Did you look at that, and if so, how is that different than a 100% AI system?
Yeah. So, Nick, the study and the experiment that I did was basically a 2x2 experimental design where people would randomly be presented with the AI-generated digital worker versus a human, a video of a human CPA, right? And so I did not measure how AI might be an assistant for a CPA, right, to help make them more productive. But I do think that as we look at the rollout and the adoption of AI, many of the use cases really will be as using AI as an assistant, as a digital assistant, as an expert to help people be more productive.
And have you seen productivity and workforces increase where they're utilizing AI as tools?
Yes, absolutely, Nick. Just from my own personal experience, right, using something as simple as Grammarly to help editing emails, help correct punctuation, help with writing, obviously it makes people very, very productive. Also, being able to utilize tools like ChatGPT or Anthropic's Claude solution, right, just it's an incredible productivity tool to help around research, identifying capabilities that are available and helping craft an initial set of thoughts or ideas.
Absolutely. And do you think that so I use it a lot for research and things like that, but I also think that part of the reason that I personally trust it, this is speaking for myself, Barry, obviously, is because we're so early in the adoption cycle. And do you think that as it continues to, as the adoption continues to drive out into the world, and we have and then because I'm assuming that there's an end going to end up being sponsored answers and things like that within these or within these the ChatGPTs, the LLMs, do you think that that will like erode trust, kind of like how like the first page in Google, you know that every single person there is paying to be there.
Right. Well, I think that that'll be an important thing, right, that'll impact the adoption of AI, Nick, is that trust and people's confidence in utilizing AI, right? I think as, both of us are kind of the traditional early adopters, right, where, we're using new technology. We always want to be the first to have the latest gadget or use it. And I think we're just about at the point with AI where we're starting to go from that early from that early adopter phase to the early majority. And really that kind of crossing the chasm, right, is I think happening real time where AI is now not just something that, people are early adopters are using, but it's starting to be integrated into the workforce where it's helping to automate repetitive tasks. It's helping to provide insight and analytics. and really being, utilized. And so I think it's, we're right inside that tornado where I think we're going to see this rapid explosion and adoption of AI technology in a wide range of areas. It's exciting to watch.
It is really, really, really exciting to watch. And speaking, with your background in looking at finance with financials, right, and taxes, and also with I mean, with obviously with the desire to do this research coming out of a response to a customer service need, how do you see AI really working to assist, being rolled out in whether it's in the financial sectors or in help desks and call centers and customer service at large?
Right. So I think that customer-facing capability is going to be one of the first areas where we see widespread adoption of AI. And if you think about it, Nick, right, one of the advantages, several of the advantages of AI is it's available 24/7. It's available on demand, right? You don't have to wait till someone gets in the office at 9 a.m. to make a call to ask a question about taxes or about how to apply for a benefit or service. And that's an area where I think we're going to see a lot of usage and adoption of it. What'll be critical, though, is that people trust it, right? That it's accurate, people perceive it as being secure, that it's not biased, and that it provides value, right? So I think those are some of the areas for us to watch.
Yeah, I completely agree from a customer service perspective, especially when you look at like the call center business specifically. I don't know about you, Barry. I have never talked to somebody that enjoys calling 800 numbers, right? We all hate that experience. It's
Right.
not good. It's not fun. You got, and then when you're calling somebody like, the IRS in April, and you have to sit on the phone for an hour and a half or 2 hours to talk to somebody who may or may not be able to answer your question. I just think that area, that you're 1,000% right, that it's ripe for adoption. And when you look at the global market cap of the call center business, which is somewhere, I think, last I saw, between $400 and $500 billion a year, I know these organizations are happily looking at cutting those costs.
Yes, absolutely. And I think another part of it, Nick, is also right, the people, there's frustration probably with the people making the calls, but there's also probably frustration and lack of job satisfaction with the people answering the calls, right? And again, it's typically a telephone call, just voice, as opposed to a much more interactive experience, right? And so with an AI digital worker or the term now that's being widely used is agentic AI or AI agents, right? Those AI agents can be made to be very human-like. Their demographics and their language, their appearance can be basically customized to correspond with perhaps the person that's asking help and asking questions. So really, there's a very unique capability, right, to improve service, which means better customer satisfaction, better citizen satisfaction, at the same time for organizations to probably reduce costs and take, look at retraining and repurposing their employees into more meaningful, thought leading types of positions. So there's a scenario for a win-win here in many ways for the people receiving the service, for changes in the people that are, doing those types of jobs today, and then as well as the opportunity for cost savings, right, by implement using AI to automate very repetitive types of activities and job roles.
Absolutely. Yeah. And I know a friend of mine works for a large cybersecurity company here in the Northern Virginia area, and he runs one of their service lines and has automated he they wouldn't give him additional budget for more support staff, so he just automated all of tier one support, all of it, right?
Right.
Which I think is, again, another great use case for these services when you start looking at change my password, things like that, where It's just not overly complex. And then to your point, it allows your workforce, your more skilled folks to, well, first, it allows you to not have to hire as many tier one folks, but then you're also able to, deploy those resources in a more effective way to solve real problems, right? Not, I can't get into my account.
Right, absolutely. So a lot of opportunity to improve the experience on the government side as well as on the citizen or customer side.
Absolutely. One thing that I always worry about and wonder about, especially as you look at doing things with like sensitive financial information or, HIPAA compliant information, that's something I'm very, aware of being in the healthcare space as well. How is are there regulatory frameworks set up as, for how AI and how these companies are supposed to handle that information, with AI being involved, and if not, where do you think it, what do you think needs to be done to ensure that it's set up properly?
Yeah, so sure thing. So AI regulation, Nick, is really just starting to emerge, right? And I think it's a very important area that there needs to be a balance, right? You could regulate it too much, which would stifle advancements in innovation. But then again, without regulation, there's not going to be controls around ensuring the accuracy of information, making sure it's secure, especially when you're dealing with personal financial information or health information or sensitive information that's specific to an organization, right? Internal types of information or trade secrets or those types of things. So it's going to be incredibly important to have that right balance of regulations. And I think that's something we'll really need to follow, especially as we move into a new administration. Nick, one area to kind of think about it in terms of how this might evolve, right, is in my research, I looked at would people be willing, to use AI as compared to a CPA, right? And if you think about like how we license experts, whether it's for a CPA or it's for an attorney or other types of expert services, people typically have to take a test and be licensed, right? We even licensed hairdressers, right, in our country. So there is an existing process where people get essentially authorized and licensed for specific roles. And again, this is my personal view as opposed to the view of InQtel, but I think you will see emerging something similar for AI, right? Where if you have an AI agentic digital worker providing tax advice, right, you'll probably want that to be tested and to be found to be secure and have some type of stamp, whether it's from a government or an industry organization that says, hey, this we've certified that this AI agent, is what it says it is, and that it provides safe, secure, and accurate information. So I think, my prediction is we'll see some things emerge around those areas where, depending on the type of AI, there'll be some type of licensing or some authority kind of validating the accuracy and security of the AI. I think without that, it's perhaps could limit the adoption, right? Because you don't want things to be the Wild West where, suddenly you see stories of AI providing the wrong information or, inaccurate types of advice.
Yeah, 1,000%. And I'm inclined to agree with you that we do need to have, and it'll probably end up being a hybrid model where, you look at federal cloud environments and how everything needs to go through a FedRAMP process to be involved in the federal, to be used in many of the federal agencies, right? And I think that there will likely be something along those lines for AI systems, right? And ensuring, especially when you are talking about organizations like the ones that you work with in DoD and the intel world, where you really want to validate not just the system, but you want to have a true understanding of the chain of custody as it relates to the data and where that all came from that you're training the system with. And then I also think that in the commercial space, and I'm not sure if it's going to be like a standalone entity. like a nonprofit, or if it's going to be the government. But I think like financials and healthcare, absolutely 1,000% needs to be some chain of custody there, because with my mental health company, there's been a huge shift in the labor market for therapists over the last 5 years, right? There's the demand through COVID especially has skyrocketed, and then when you look at our climate of global instability and how we're and how things are not, it's not quite as secure as it was 30, 40 years ago, or in the 90s, right? I guess that's 30 years ago now.
Yep,
So,
right.
but I think that, like, with all of that and the increased demand for like therapy services specifically, I know that there are companies working on building, AI bots that can be therapists and provide advice. But to your point, with the level of system errors, and like I worry about AI systems that will do that, and provide that kind of support for folks. And it's the same thing with like AI friends and AI significant others that people are, creating these products because, you think about, well, but the therapist specifically, you think about, all I can imagine is that something's going to happen. Somebody's going to hurt themselves or somebody else. And they're in the, when they're caught, the police are going to ask them, why did you do it? My therapist told me to do it. And, oh, who's your therapist? It's this AI bot. And like that worries me. I'm really, that is a terrifying thought.
Yeah, absolutely, Nick. And I think an incident like that, right, will impact people's ability, willingness to trust AI. So it's incredibly important. And I think your example of kind of mapping it to FedRAMP is a great way to kind of thinking of it at, right? Because FedRAMP occurs at different levels, right? You have authorization at the infrastructure layer, at the platform as a service layer, at the SaaS layer. And I think as you think about AI, you want to make sure that it's on secure kind of computing infrastructure and secure platforms and secure software. But then the other piece about AI is where did the data come from that trained the AI? And was that data accurate? Was that data that was utilized? Was it validated that there was no bias or incorrect information in that data? So I think that's another piece of it. And then also certification at that actual AI layer, right? So if you create an AI therapist, making sure that it's secure at all those layers that I just described. And Nick, I do think that a therapist is a really fascinating kind of use case for AI, right? As part of my research, I came across a study where elderly people, right, during COVID, to help them deal with anxiety and loneliness, it was found that an AI assistant, a digital assistant, w was really something that they were willing to interact with. And by having that available, it helped them reduce their feelings of loneliness and anxiety. So I think there is a lot of opportunity there, but we also have to make sure it's safe, reliable, and doesn't have unintended consequences.
Yeah, 1,000%, 1,000%. I agree with you on all of that. I think that it's fascinating that you say that the AI agent helped curb loneliness. One of the things that I have been talking about a lot over the last couple of years is the epidemic of loneliness that's been going on, and largely, I think, fueled via social media and then amplified through COVID. And watching the changing. The last, I'd say, 15 years, we've watched childhood change in a fundamental way, going from like a play-based childhood to an online-based childhood. And I think that that has had a lot of, consequences. And I think that, my concern, and this is like not based on data, my concern is that, with reliance on an AI-based, outlet to help relieve some of the loneliness, it's going to continue to reinforce the downward trend of social skills in this country, right? People are afraid to talk. People are afraid to have conversations. And people are unaware that you have to kind of like sit with that and walk through it to come out the other side in a way, to grow, right? Because if you don't work through your fears, you're not going to grow as a human. And so I think that it would be, I think it's something that should be studied. It's fascinating.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think an important takeaway, Nick, right, is that AI is not a substitute for human-to-human interaction. And there's always going to be an important need for that, whether it's providing services to someone or even in the workplace, right? So I think it'll be fascinating to kind of see how we affect that balance. But I think having that human-to-human interaction, definitely needs to be there for people as they develop and develop personal relationships. So I think it's one of those things, right, where you too much of something maybe is not the best. And I think we'll need to figure out ways to leverage and make AI be an assistant, right, and a productivity tool, but not necessarily replace very important human interactions. And I also think, right, we need humans, at least for the foreseeable future, to be overseeing the AI, right? To be proactively monitoring it, to make sure it's providing correct advice, and being able to, kind of step in or stop, if it's found the AI is providing something incorrect. I think a human needs to be available to kind of interact and correct that, whatever's done incorrectly by the AI.
I absolutely agree, and I think that to the point that you and I have been talking about for a while is that will continue to reinforce the trust in the system that will maybe allow us to, to not have to have so much oversight. But I think it's going to be a long road to get there. Although in AI time, things are all like I think that the rate of change is just continuing to accelerate, and it's fascinating.
Yeah, it really is. And there's a lot of analogies, right, to the dot-com era, right, where everything then was, based on web time or internet speed. And I think we're seeing something very similar in AI in terms of just the rapid acceleration and utilization and growth of AI in the same way that we saw the rapid growth and rise of the internet and, moving business systems and interactions online.
Absolutely. And as organizations and many of them are preparing to, implement AI either as a tool or to replace folks, what's some advice that you would give and do give to organizations looking at implementing systems to either replace or replace jobs or augment jobs to increase productivity?
Right. So, if you think about it, Nick, right, introducing any type of new technology, right, can produce anxiety with the workforce, right? And what it's a basic kind of change management type of scenario, right? And to be effective at change management, it involves transparency on the part of the leadership of an organization to really outline the goals and kind of their vision of how to implement or utilize new technology. And then it also, what's incredibly important is training of the workforce, educating them about AI, how it's used, how the technology can improve the organization's performance, but also showing their employees how this can be a productivity tool that can offload repetitive, kind of boring, non-higher thinking kind of roles, and really position it as this is a way for people to perhaps get more job satisfaction or have their roles change and evolve to really do the kind of things where they can really add value, as opposed to spending 80% of their day, filling out forms or doing repetitive types of work. But it's going to be very important, communication, training, and transparency will be key. And I think also, being upfront that AI may, is going to change roles, right? Especially in the white collar force, right? We've talked about how it could be used for frontline customer support and questions. And I think what's important with any kind of change management is that transparency and just, making your organization aware of the vision and how this can be utilized.
Yeah, man, absolutely. And I would, so as you look at automating, workforce and things like that, somebody mentioned to me that they think that AI is a better tool to replace an executive than a frontline worker. And because his point was that when you're an executive like you've been, where you're managing a group of, 4, 5, 6 6,000 people with all kinds of teams and a lot of different projects going on. A human there's a limit to the amount of detailed information that we as humans can intake and process and look at, and then make decisions in all in at any one time. But an AI system can track every single the work of every single person in the division, 5,000 people, understand all the projects that are going on at a level that, we don't have the ability to read and comprehend, and continue to stay up on it in real time, 1,000% of the time, and then understand, and then with that level of understanding and that granular, more granular understanding of the projects, be able to help eliminate redundancies and eliminate redundancies and more effectively manage workforces and manage budgets in some ways. And also from a savings perspective, somebody sitting over 5,000 people is going to be, is from a overhead perspective more expensive than a lot, than a frontline worker, and you'd have to automate a lot more frontline workers to out to have the same kind of cost savings for an organization. Is that something you would agree with? Kind of, what do you think?
So I think you're on definitely onto something there, Nick. What I think we're going to see is AI is going to bring this incredible ability to provide analytics and insight, and really identify areas that maybe are top performing or kind of lower performing, right? So as you think about like an executive or a manager, in order to make decisions, you need that data, and you need that data to be kind of bubbled up and highlighted to you, right? And so I think that AI can will be a tremendous tool to bring, information to executives. I think, for the, like I said, for the foreseeable future, hopefully we don't see AI replacing those executives, but it's really a tool to help them make better decisions and to make informed, data-driven decisions, right? And when I used to manage teams, right, what I've always found was really important is metrics, right? You have to have a way to measure productivity, progress, and I think AIs will be a phenomenal tool to help analyze those metrics, measure them, and then bubble up when there's an inconsistency. Right. And, we see that being applied today to things like maintenance on equipment, right? Where AI can be monitoring when it, and predicting failures on equipment so that, maintenance can be done ahead of time, but instead of waiting for something to fail. It's somewhat similar in the area of, overseeing an organization where you can hopefully identify and highlight problems before they blow up and become a critical issue.
Absolutely. No, it's a and that's a great analogy when you think about because a lot of the time, and I mean, if a problem rose to your level at whether it's Oracle or Adobe or elsewhere, it was something that other people couldn't solve. And but it pro and I would guess a lot of the time, if there was something was done early on, that problem never would have happened. And you
Yeah,
just have to
absolutely.
make that decision, right?
Yeah, for sure. It's an early warning type of system, right? Where you highlight problems before they become enormous problems, right? So, yeah.
Absolutely. Yeah, yeah, man. It's really fascinating. And you well, so what are your thoughts on techno stress and its its effect on AI adoption in high stakes environments? And also, can you define techno stress for folks that may not be aware of what that means? And then can you also speak to any demographic differences that you noticed in your research?
Yeah, sure thing, Nick. So I found the whole concept of techno stress really fascinating, but also, somewhat intuitive. So essentially, techno stress is when people are using new technology, a new online system, maybe, utilizing AI, or even using figuring out how to use a new remote control for their TV, right? Some people get very high level of anxiety. They become very concerned about using new types of technology. And so that's really what techno stress is, right? And being able to measure and reduce techno stress in my research, I found is very important to drive trust, right? So people get stressed and anxious. They're not going to necessarily find it useful, a tool useful. If it's not useful, they probably won't trust it. And
Right.
so it's an important kind of thing to follow. And so what my research, go ahead, Nick, you
I
were
was
going
gonna
to
say
mention something.
that's why we don't that's why we don't let engineers design UIs.
Yes, exactly. You are absolutely right. That's a great example. And with techno stress, Nick, right? The research that I did showed that older people, right, had higher levels of techno stress, and younger people had lower, right? And again, this is a generalization. There's always exceptions, and it's not going to apply to everyone. But I think what'll be really be important, especially around AI or really implementing any new type of system, is basically anticipating and addressing the potential for techno stress right up front. And I think the way you do that is around training, by not only training how to use the system, but explaining the benefits, how it's built, why it's safe, why it's better than the old way of doing thing, right? Doing things before, like we talked about, right? Change management is just so important in terms of implementing any new type of technology, as well as making sure it's easy to use and intuitive, right? Back to your point about engineering, led UIs. So I think, all those things are important. So as organizations think about adopting and implementing AI, I think just being aware of anticipating and addressing people's stress levels will be very important.
No, that's absolutely fascinating, and yeah, remind me. So we have one of the programs that we've been working on is we're rolling out a new system at OIG for one of these agencies here in the DC area, and it's interesting. We have gentleman on the program is he's an end user trainer, right? So his job is he doesn't build the system. He comes in and helps ensure and smooths adoption. And there was a one of the main stakeholders on the program. He was a little difficult. He was not giving a lot of he was a little he was difficult to deal with because he didn't understand what we were doing and the end goal of it until we had a call with the trainer where he comes on and he talks because he is not an engineer or an architect. He's a user. He's coming at it from a user's perspective. And after he explained to this gentleman, everything in more in depth from that perspective, he walked to, the high level stakeholder walked away thrilled and under because he understood finally, right? And I
Right.
think that a lot of the thing that, something that I think a lot of people don't realize or don't think about enough is that, what you say is almost less important than how you say it. And if you're not communicating with somebody and understand and thinking about the world from their point of view, right? And trying to understand how they interpret information and interpret data, as a human being, you're not going to be able to effectively communicate with them in a way that they not only understand it, but they hear you and they buy into it. And I think that I completely agree that ensuring that the trust and reliability of these systems is I'm not going to say ubiquitous within the workforce, but is there and present in the workforce, and they understand not only how to use the tool, right, but also what the tool is supposed to do. I think that without those key elements, that we're going to lose people through the adoption cycles.
Yeah, Absolutely. It's critically important, right? And you need to customize that training or the explaining how technology will help someone based on their role, their education, their demographics, right? And again, one of the biggest challenges of implementing any new technology research has shown, right, is this perceived ease of use, perceived value that it'll provide. And doing that training and explaining it upfront to people is really critical, right? Because no one likes, most people don't like change, right? Or most people are hesitant to train to change, or the old adage of, well, we've always done it this way, right? You kind of need to really address, hey, yes, we've always done it, the old way, but hey, the reason we're making this change is because it's going to what is it going to do to improve service to our customers or internal constituents, and how is it going to make an individual's own job and work life better? And so I think it's really important to factor that in terms of, implementing any type of new technology.
Absolutely. And do you see a large difference in the size of the organization and ease of implementation? Is it and so why, obviously it's going to be easier to implement something in a smaller organization, but why is it so much harder in, whether it's a, Adobe or a Lockheed Martin or a, one of these larger organizations or a government agency? What makes it so much more difficult to implement across, across larger organizations?
Yeah. So the larger the organization, right, the more different opinions and different job roles that could potentially be impacted. And what I've always found, Nick, in terms of implementing new systems, right, is you don't kind of go big, big bang where you suddenly roll something out to an entire organization, right? What's really important is to have that initial pilot phase where you validate that this technology can provide value. If there are issues, you adopt the system to address concerns or issues or areas where it needs to be improved. And then really use that as a proof point of how it can then benefit the whole organization. So I'm a big believer in the whole prototype to pilot to va before you go to full scale adoption. And that's a model I think gets proven out all the time as the most successful way to implement technology, as opposed to turning the switch, one morning and suddenly everyone has a new system, right? That's often a recipe for chaos and confusion and a lot of issues.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I see that in my small organizations, that I run where we change things. I'm in the process of looking for a new electronic health record system for my mental health company. And, even with, 5 or 6 stakeholders that are truly making the decision, like there's a lot that goes into it. And so I can't imagine the complexity when you start talking about, rolling out a new system at, a government agency where you have thousands of people involved. And yeah, that just, it's a lot, right?
Yeah, it really is. And unfortunately, right, there's a lot of history of very unsuccessful rollouts of technology in the government, right? And so I think it's government's getting better all the time in implementing new technology. But I think there's just been such of a history of failures on the part of IT projects. And again, I think it's all about bringing that technology in, doing a pilot, adjusting, modifying, customizing before you go with a full-scale implementation.
Yeah, 1,000%. And
Yeah.
as we look forward, where what are some areas that you think that we should explore next, in as it relates to AI and trust, to just let to ensure that innovation is responsible? Because I think that, a lot of people think of AI and all they think of is, the Terminator, and like it's gonna take over the world and Skynet's gonna like, but I think we're a long way from there, but what do you think from a responsibility perspective? Where are we going, and what do you think is really important to keep in mind?
Yeah, so there's several key things, Nick. I think obviously making sure that the technology, that AI, right, is secure, that it provides value, that per people's personal information is protected, and then having some type of body to regulate and then as well as certify the accuracy of the AI. So it is partly regulation, it's partly industry being very careful about the types of capabilities that they roll out. And then also, educating that end user around why it's secure, why it's trustworthy, and why it's pro can provide a better and cost-effective solution to them. So it's a combination of things, but it's really going to be critical to kind of get those things right, right? Otherwise, I think the adoption curve will take a lot longer with AI. The longer the adoption curve takes, the longer it'll take to see the impact, right? And there was a study that was done by PwC that estimated that if AI is implemented and adopted in a relatively straightforward manner, that the impact to the global economy is something like $15.7 trillion in by 2030. And to put that in context, the total current output of India and China is around $15.7 trillion. So the ability, the potential for
India and China
product
combined, right? India
combined,
combined, right? And
combined, right?
that's like 20-ish percent of the world's population.
Yeah, that's correct. And so, the potential impact of AI is enormous when you think about adding that type of increase in productivity by utilizing AI, right?
Yeah, man. No, 1,000%. Before we get ready to wrap up here, is there anything else you'd like to say or any other points you'd like to make? Anything that I missed?
Yeah. So, Nick, this has been a great discussion, and I wanted to thank you again for your thought leadership in putting this podcast together. I think, what I'd encourage everyone is to really learn more about AI, to start experimenting with it on a personal basis, educate yourself on what its capabilities are, and then also for organizations to start looking at, start experimenting with it, bringing it in for certain types of processes, make sure that information is secure and it's protected, and you don't want information going out to the public or out on the wild, especially sensitive personal or organizational information. But I think the key point is that this technology is here today, and if you don't adopt it, your competition or other organizations will be adopting it, and you don't want to be left behind, right? You think about what happened in .com, the companies and the organizations that embrace going to the web, they're the ones that became stronger, better, and grew quite a bit. The companies that didn't adapt, right? The Sears, the Kmart's, right? We kind of know what happened to organizations that didn't embrace and adopt the technology. So I think that's one of the key takeaways.
1,000%, the Blockbuster story will never cease to amaze me. And they had the opportunity to buy the company that put them out of business and chose not to because they were so secure. And I 1,000% agree with you that, in this day and age, and it's been this way for a while, you either innovate or you die. You innovate or you become irrelevant, and irrelevance is death. And I think that there are companies that will be on the S in the S&P 500 that are AI companies, where it's a bunch of people in a room somewhere right now thinking about this amazing idea that they have. And I think that we are I think there absolutely will be, some job loss, right? But I think that that job loss, as with any major economic change, will not there are going to be some people that just aren't working in these specific roles anymore, but they're going to have that, there's going to be a lot of opportunity on the other side when you're talking over $15 trillion in GDP growth over four, five, six, it's
6 years, yeah.
years. I couldn't remember what year it was, man. I apologize.
That's okay. Time flies, as we say. Yeah.
Absolutely. So I 1000% agree with you. And, I really appreciate you coming on as well. It's been a lot of fun. It's been a great conversation. I appreciate your thought leadership and your continued drive to innovate, not just in private companies, in the federal government and elsewhere, man. So I really appreciate you.
Yeah, thank you, Nick. And if anyone from your audience would like to contact me, the best way is through LinkedIn. And then also my research, my dissertation is out there on Google Scholar. You just Google my name and it'll pop up. So it's been a pleasure, and I wish you all the best. And thanks again for the opportunity.
Thank you for listening to Robots and Red Tape, everybody.